KMCHD3 Detroit, KMPS HD3 Seattle, WBMX HD3 Boston,
and on AOL Radio
and Yahoo Launchcast.
CBS Radio's The New Sky.
Enlightened philosophers tell us that we are divine beings in human form. Let's get real here. How can we live a busy life with a job, kids, and a mortgage and still be spiritual? Join CJ Liu as she tackles real life issues through a spiritual lens and talks with experts in relationships, work, and more. You'll get practical life skills and learn how to touch, feel, and experience a whole new way of living. Be a force for good. And fire it up with CJ. Log on, fireitupwithcj.com, and call CJ now.
248-545-SOUL.
CBS Radio's The Sky. Believe.
Live from the headquarters of CBS Radio, we're here with Fire It Up with CJ. Now on fireitupwithcj.com. This month, we continue to look at the environment and how you can make a difference. Be sure to catch CJ on her website. It's fireitupwithcj.com. And also her Facebook is the same, Fired Up with CJ. So, you know, take some time, check it out. She's got a lot of great articles and interesting topics on there. You can also get in touch with her there. How are you today, CJ?
You know what? I am enjoying the weather and having otherwise a suckish time.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. We're most of the state, at least you have good weather.
I know, that's true. So you know, what's it like over in Michigan?
Well, today it's rainy, kind of cold. It was 70 yesterday, so we get a little tease, and then it gets
nice.
Cold. But, you know, hey, we need the rain. You can't deny it.
Well, that's great. Well, today we actually have a really great show. Hopefully our guests will show up. It's Ellis Jones, who is the author of The Better World Shopping Guide. And so I'll tell you a little bit about the book as we try to get Ellis on the phone to talk to him and chat with him. Welcome, everybody. So I'll tell you a little bit as we try to get him online how I got in touch with Ellis is that I was looking at Amazon and I was looking at and I knew we were going to be focusing this month on the environment. And so I was looking at the best-selling books and the Better World Shopping Guide appeared. And I think we have Ellis on the line. Hi, Professor Ellis Jones.
Hi, CJ. There. How are you?
Good. How are you? So I was just talking about how I found your book and why we have you on. And I was saying one of the things that one of the points that Professor Jones makes that I really enjoyed is that, you know, every year the average family spends about $22,000. And then those sales are used to generate you know, those sales are then used for those companies to invest in who knows what, but generally they fuel whatever that company's values, principles, and practices are. Now, we don't think as consumers like, well, I'm actually making an investment, so in a lot of ways the dollar that I'm spending is really an endorsement of that company, or at least by minimally the product that they produce. And I've never, you know, I think about it, and I think more and more we're more conscious that the money that we invest actually goes into corporations who then spend it on who knows what, lobbyists, or they don't spend it on stuff like environmental changes that they need to make. So what I like about Professor Ellis Jones' book, the book is called The Better World Shopping Guide, is it helps us as consumers be more cognizant of the products that we're buying and then what the impact those purchases make on the world generally. So, and making sure that we feel good about our purchases and that they match our own values. So welcome, Ellis.
No, thank you.
Yeah, so I don't know. Did I do a good job describing your book?
Yes, I think so. You know, I'm a sociologist, but I used to, as an undergraduate, study political science. And I think I never quite moved out of the realm of politics because when I think about how consumers spend their dollars, I'm always struck by the parallels with how we vote in our own democracy. And so I really think that we need to begin to understand how these votes that we engage in on a daily basis are really like investments, love how you put it, investments. They are investments in the company. They give the company the power they need to purchase from other companies the products and services to make their own. And if those are kind of good, responsible, conscious companies, those dollars are then kind of collected together and become a really powerful force for change in a positive sense in the world. But alternately, if those are just kind of being handed out by us kind of willy-nilly, then companies that are linked with other companies that are polluting or maybe abusing human rights or, you know, testing on animals or ruining communities, that those dollars are going in that direction, all without us knowing it. So I think it's really time for us to begin to take this on as an understanding of how our dollars actually shape the world.
Yeah, and I like your analogy. I like your analogy of the vote because, you know, here April 15th just passed. We just, you know, we just gave a gigantic check to the IRS and you know, we actually don't have a lot of say. We vote for, you know, the various candidates and we hope that our candidate wins. But then what they do with the money that we give for taxes, it doesn't seem like we have a lot of choice aside from electing particular officials. I mean, that's so indirect. But I think actually when you buy something, in some ways it's a lot more direct. You know what you're investing in. If you have a book like your own, you have that sense of what you're going and investing in. I think in some ways in a more direct way. I don't know. Do you agree?
Well, that's right. I mean, again, we vote once every 4 years, once every 2 years if we're really good about it. There are layers upon layers between us and the actual kind of results of our voting. But with this type of economic voting, we're voting many times a day. So every day we're engaging in this activity, and those votes are accumulated very directly, and we can understand them because we understand, like, how money accumulates so quickly when you collect it from a large swath of the consumer population. And yet we don't really think about it. We're concerned or focused on, you know, what we need to eat or drink or something to wear or someplace to go. And yet, if we start to think about this as a series of both kind of personal investments in our own needs and desires and in a social investment, a kind of collective social and environmental investment, you know, we start to realize that this is how we shape the world. It's something like two-thirds of our own economy is completely run by consumer dollars in the marketplace. This is all of the Coca-Colas and the T-shirts and the, you know, bicycle helmets and the, you know, gasoline. All of that adds up to two-thirds of the most powerful economic engine on the planet. And so understanding that that kind of engine shapes the way the world runs is a really, I think, key concept for us in the 21st century and for us to begin to take that on as a way for us to bring about the social change that I think we so desperately want in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it is more direct. It is more engaging in some ways than our kind of once every 4 years. And yet, in some ways, they're the same.
Yeah, because, I mean, every day you make purchases. You go get coffee. Well, in Seattle, you get coffee every day. You get coffee. You go fill up your gas. You go to the grocery store. It's probably during a week. At least you're going to a store or a venue like that once a week, minimally. And those are votes that you have. Now, going back to your comment about two-thirds of the economy, I don't understand what that means. So if you look at GNP, two-thirds of – what does that mean? I don't understand your point.
So when economists look at, you know, I always used to be confused when I would listen to, say, NPR on the radio, and there was, they kept talking about consumer confidence. And I kept thinking, well, why do they keep telling me about why consumers are confident? Why should I care whether or not consumers are confident? It doesn't make any sense. And yet it's one of our most important economic indicators because what consumers spend and how they spend generates that part of our kind of, our GNP or our GDP, if we're talking about, you know, how quickly the engine is running and how quickly it is producing and consuming it, it really relies heavily, at least our modern United States and in many ways global economy, but we'll stick to the United States for now, relies directly on consumer spending. I don't know if anyone else noticed, but like after 9/11, very quickly, the president came out and was giving us tax cuts and telling people to kind of get out and spend over the holidays because it was such an important economic season. It seemed like an odd comment to make as president, you know, so quickly after 9/11. But in some ways it was that the consumers had lost confidence because of the attacks and that he was in some ways encouraging us to get back out there because otherwise, you know, the economy would keep slowing down and we'd start to feel the effects on an even deeper level. So this economic component, I don't think, is something that we've yet wrapped our heads around as individuals, and yet it's crucial on the collective level if we're talking about how the world works.
Right. So here's what I'm remembering my macroeconomics. So GMP equals consumption, which is what we do as consumers, investments minus savings or something plus government spending. So that's what you're saying. So two-thirds of our GMP is as a result of consumer spending. So
Right. It's
we're doing a lot to fuel the economy. And the question is, not only are we doing a lot to fuel the economy, but those investments then have some type of outcome that are either profitable or not profitable societally, right? So that's I think the point you're making. So going back to, do I really make a difference? You know, there's part of me, sometimes I think, really, I'm going to switch my toothpaste because I'm going to go to, I was looking at this list and thinking, all right, really, am I going to switch my toothpaste from P&G, which is a large company, to, I can't remember what it had on this list, but something smaller like Burt's or whatever the icky toothpaste that I don't like.
Right.
Which seems so stupid. But you know what? It's a big deal for me. I'm like, okay, I'm going to try to do this. But is it really going to make a difference? I mean, how much does one person's individual effort make? And how much does that impact in the greater look at things?
Well, you know, again, I think I would go back to kind of my training in political science. We're in exactly the same dilemma when we are trying to figure out whether or not our vote will matter once every two or 4 years, right? Technically, if you get sick and you don't show up at the poll, you're probably not going to swing the election one way or another, right?
Right.
It's just one vote. And yet, without us believing that our votes make a difference, the democracy itself fails. It is the only kind of essential component for democracy is participation. And every time we lose a vote, every time our voting percentage goes down from, say, 60% turnout to 50% to 40%, we end up representing less and less of our population, and we end up with a kind of worse and worse representative government. So we understand it at that level. And yet, the same thing is true at the consumer level. So
yeah,
on the
absolutely.
One hand, it doesn't really matter what toothpaste or soda pop or gasoline you buy at any moment in any given day. But what matters is that you and tens of thousands, millions of other people start switching over from these products one by one to sway huge elections in the economic sphere. And so companies are, making money or losing money based on this collective impact of these economic votes. So it's that contradiction we need to wrap our heads around. Yes, one vote doesn't technically matter, and yet it's the only thing that matters.
Yeah, I think in some ways you have to, in your mind, say, okay, I'm in a democracy. I want to participate, and I want my voice to be heard. Or you say, I'm opting all control, and I don't care. I'll just let whoever is running, what corporation is running, and then I'll be quiet because I'll be – you know, it's like you can either decide to participate or not. And if you decide to participate, then these kind of things matter because in some ways you have to make a fundamental, I think, decision as an individual on whether you're going to participate in the society you live in or whether you'll just, like, lie there and let everything roll over you. That's my take on what you just said.
Well, and on another level, we're already always participating all the time. But the difference is we're not looking at the ballot. Every time the ballot shows up on our porch every morning, right, we're just checking things off more or less at random and sending it in.
Yeah.
And expecting some kind of different outcome. The difference is now, you know, we take a look at the ballot and we say, wait a second, I don't like the ethics of this particular company, or I would prefer to support this particular investment or this other, you know, behavior, and actually checking the boxes after we look at them and understand something about the various candidates that we're electing on a daily basis. So the funny thing is that we can't opt out. The only way to opt out of the economic system is to basically, you know, go live in a cave somewhere. And so we are voting. The question is, are we looking at our own ballot?
Mm-hmm. Good point. So quick question before we break. We have a minute before our next break. But tell me something good. Tell me something good. Is there some promising thing? I mean, you entered into writing this book because you were trying to figure out if individuals can actively contribute to the resolution of global social and environmental issues. What makes you happy? What makes you sad in a minute or less?
Well, I can tell you that every corporation on this planet is paying attention. That makes me happy. Okay. Every 20 years ago, only a handful of companies generated corporate social responsibility reports for themselves. Now every company that you can name in your head creates a report annually, and they do it because consumers have demanded it, because they recognize that consumers are out there spending their money in those directions. So while they may not always be sincere, they are all paying attention, and that makes me happy.
Okay, that's a smiley face for me. What's your frowny face?
So the frowny face is, if you read those corporate social responsibility reports, they're just a kind of litany of why I am the greatest, most responsible company on the earth. So they're completely untrustworthy.
Okay.
So you should never read them because all of the data that you need to collect is data by created by third-party organizations that track these issues, not by the companies themselves.
Interesting. Okay, fascinating. All right, we're going to be talking more about doing some introspection on, are you a good citizen? Are you a good consumer? How are they related? I think we've talked a lot about that more, but we're going to dive a little bit more deeply into that. Folks, make sure to subscribe to us by going to www.firedupwithcj, and you'll get a list of upcoming schedules, articles, and be eligible to win freebies. All right, we'll be right back.
CBS Radio's The Sky.
The Sky.
Now back to Fire It Up with CJ. Be a force for good. And fire it up with CJ. Log on, fireitupwithcj.com, and call CJ now.
248-545-7685.
On CBS Radio's The Sky. The Sky.
Welcome back to Fire It Up with CJ. You can also find her show on iTunes. Her guest today is Professor Ellis Jones, author of The Better World Shopping Guide. I'm Cassandra from CBS Sky Radio, and we're going to go right back to CJ and Professor Jones.
Hey, everybody. You know what? I am seriously getting fired up. Do you realize, actually, my heart is beating faster? I am fired up about this topic today. We have Professor Ellis Jones from Holy Cross, and we are talking about his book, The Better World Shopping Guide. You know, so often I think, what can I do to make the world a better place? And all of us, I think, deep down inside want to have a world that's better and feel like we're contributing to making a great and being in the best world possible. And the question is, what is our role in creating that world? And we have Professor Ellis Jones again, who teaches a class on consumer and corporate social responsibility, and he explores the idea of what it means to be a good consumer, a good citizen, and good corporation. And so we're going to talk about the first part, good consumer and good citizen, during this segment. So welcome back, Ellis.
Oh, good to be back.
So good consumer, good citizen, what does it mean? I think we've talked a lot about that in segment more, one, but any other insights to add?
Well, yeah, I think, you know, I just want to emphasize how essential it is for us to take on this role that we're not used to taking on. In the 21st century, we have to think of ourselves as really, in some ways, arbiters of power, and political power as well as economic power, and we build these institutions ourselves. You know, it was something like if we measure Walmart based on its revenue, if it were to declare itself a country tomorrow, it would be the 23rd most powerful country in the world. Now, where does it gain all of that power? It gains it all from individual consumers. It gains it from us buying, you know, our everyday goods. Without us, they don't have that power. So they rely on us. They're very interested in what we do with our dollars, and this is the most effective form of communicating back and forth with economic institutions. They will do as we tell them, as long as we use those dollars to communicate.
But here's my only issue with using dollars. It's not, so let's say I don't go buy something at Walmart, then, you know, I understand that it does have an impact, and over time all those dollars make a difference. But how will it get them to stop outsourcing their labor to children or wherever else they go, or stop buying a lot of cheap overseas products? How are they going to know that that's what I'm pissed off about when I don't go shopping there?
Well, this is a good point. I mean, there's always, just like with your representatives, the question is, how do they know when you stop voting for them and you vote for their competitor, that you stop voting for them because of reason X, Y, or Z?
Mm-hmm.
Now, on the one hand, it's always even more effective if you write letters and communicate in other ways and emails and so forth to tell them exactly why, just like with representatives. It's more effective if you give them letters. However, they are tracking everything we do. just like when, you know, you don't have to worry necessarily about your politicians wondering why, you know, certain groups are no longer voting for them or why, you know, their numbers aren't as good in the polls. They know because they pay all kinds of people to track this. And the same is true in the economic world. Like, they understand that they are losing enormous amounts of dollars due to these various reasons, and they do things to compensate. So, for example, we know that Walmart knows this because Walmart is constantly now in the news trying to kind of green up its own image, trying to sell, you know, 1 billion CFL light bulbs, trying to bring organic into their supermarket, trying to kind of create many more options in order to appease this segment of the consuming public that is growing and is generating enormous profits that it is losing its access to. So part of this is, I mean, back to the smiley face and frowny face, you know, some people lament the fact that many of these kind of greener, smaller companies are ultimately getting bought out by larger, kind of more profitable, kind of standard corporate names. And on the one hand, that is sad, but on the other hand, it means that they understand exactly what's going on. They understand that they're losing profits to these sectors, and that's why they're taking this so seriously. That's why they're generating these reports. That's why they're buying up these companies, is that they see the dollars that they're losing.
Yeah, no, here's my only question. Now, I worked at one of the evil companies. I've worked at two of the evil companies that you have on your list. I don't know if that makes me evil, but I did work. I used to work at Microsoft and General Electric, which I think are like on your top 10 awful, you know, go to hell if you work there kind of companies. And here's what I said. And I was in those companies making products. Now, I don't work there anymore, so I really can't speak with respect to what those companies do now. However, when I was at Microsoft working for those products and designing products, you know, the people in the corporate social responsibility groups, now they're just kind of looking at the public relations and what's our reputation? Is it good? Is it bad? What can we do to improve it? But no one ever talked to me on a product level that said, hey, you know, when you do that, that's pretty bad. You know, I mean, no one ever told me that. So I kind of question, like, so going back to the really, does it matter? So I don't go to Walmart anymore because I don't like some of their environmental practices. I kind of question whether Walmart, you know, yes, someone in their corporate social responsibility knows, like, what the hot issues are, you know, because they've read your book. And they're now trying to do and look good in their corporate social responsibility reports on those areas. But I kind of question whether they're really, truly doing thing at a deep level, that they really care.
That's a great question, and the answer is they aren't, right? That's part of the reason why those companies don't get good grades. You know, every company is engaging at some level, but the least expensive level to engage at is the one of public relations, is the one to kind of what they call greenwashing. They basically begin to shift and shape their own image so that they look like they're responding to the consumer public around these issues, but instead of changing the behavior, they just change the talk about it.
Right, so, it's a marketing spin.
Exactly, and you know, this is exactly why this research is so necessary at this time, and that is that consumers cannot legitimately tell the difference anymore between companies that are just excellent at their marketing and the companies that are actually making changes on the ground that are kind of deeply felt changes that affect supply chains and human beings, you know, labor conditions and, you know, environmental pollution and global warming and all of that, that's no longer available. So this is the kind of – the bad news is that the system response is a combination of, you know, response with integrity and response without integrity. And the problem is how to decipher which is which. And this is exactly why, in some ways, I started this project, is I wanted to create some kind of research hub that would cut through that greenwashing for consumers so that the consumer can say, you know what, I'm not going to be fooled by so-and-so's PR campaign. I'm still going to push my dollars over to these other companies that are actually moving forward in a real way and spending their dollars to do so and therefore need my dollars to reward their own investments.
Okay, so I'm looking at your list. You have like 25 or so sources that you merge together. And, I mean, how do I know that this is not equally biased in some progressive perspective? Do you know what I mean? So I look at this and go, okay, well, I don't know anything about these sources that you're using, the Clean Computer Campaign, the Green American Green Business Certification. These are the databases that you're using to kind of draw a conclusion on whether they're ethical or not, or doing good things? How do I know that these aren't equally skewed in a different direction?
That's a great question. One of the things I do is I list all of my data sources in the back of the book and on the website, and I list all of the web links to those sources so that you can check them out yourself and decide for yourself whether or not they're biased. Now, having said that, like, I've personally gone through all of the third-party sources that are available that I have ever shown up on my radar, and I evaluate them for that same kind of standard of integrity. And let me just point out one way in which I try not to skew things. So, for example, Center for Responsive Politics tracks donations, both lobbying, both campaign donations and also lobbying for corporate lobbyists on Capitol Hill. And early on I had to decide, well, am I actually going to track, you know, donating to particular parties or, you know, progressive or conservative stances? And I decided very early on that, you know, the problem is not whether a company gives to one party or another. In fact, many very savvy companies give to both parties equally in large amounts so that whoever wins, they win. The problem is really money in politics. The problem is really corporations deciding that, you know what, it's not enough for us to use our profits in the economic realm. We have to begin to reshape the democracy so that legislation now is in our favor and not in the favor of consumers. So when I use that as a data point, it doesn't matter who they're giving to. What I track is, are they, how much money are they spending on lobbyists? How much money are they spending on campaign donations? Because I think most people would agree the problem is money in politics. The problem is we need these large amounts of money to kind of be removed from the political system so that our kind of political democratic voices can be heard clearly by our representatives rather than kind of through a filter of, oh, yes, but I need to get reelected, and the big money is over here at these corporate level.
Really good point. So, wow, interesting. So for folks who haven't seen this guide, what the guide does is it has a bunch of different categories, coffee, clothing, cleaning products, chocolate, chips, body care, and it gives ratings A, B, C, D, and F. It gives grades. And then within each of the grades, it provides a set of products. So in body care, be Dr. Braun or Method, Tweezerman, Pangea Organics is an A plus versus a D plus is Coppertone, Aired, Arm and Hammer. So I could actually look at this as a consumer and say, okay, now if I have a choice of products, I'm probably going to try to choose something that's in the A plus, A or A minus. So folks, we're going to talk more about what it means to be a good company, and I have to break, so we'll be right back.
CBS Radio's The Sky.
The Sky.
Now back to Fire It Up with CJ. Be a force for good and fire it up with CJ. Log on, fireitupwithcj.com, and call CJ now.
248-545-7685.
On CBS Radio's The Sky. Sky.
Today we have author of The Better World Shopping Guide, Professor Ellis Jones. Make sure to get more shows like this one at fireitupwithcj.com. I'm Cassandra, live from CBS Sky Radio. We're going to go right back to CJ and Professor Jones.
Hello, welcome back. Those who want to be a force for good. We are here talking about The Better World Shopping Guide with Professor Ellis Jones, who also teaches a class in consumer and corporate social responsibility at Holy Cross. And one of the things that he explores is what it means to be a good consumer, a good citizen, and good corporation. And we talked in the last segment about being a good consumer and being a good citizen. And now it's about, this segment is really focusing about being a good company. What does that mean to be a good company, and what is the role of a company in society? So welcome back, Ellis.
Oh, good to be back.
So what is a role? I mean, what is, if you work, if you're in a corporation, what should its role be aside from providing two-thirds of the GNP? What else is its role?
Well, you know, it's really, I mean, we can boil it down to this. It's the old cliched saying of, with power comes responsibility. These are now powerful institutions, and just because they're not political institutions doesn't mean that they don't have a responsibility. They do shape our world now more so than ever before, I would argue historically. And thus, if we want our world to be a kind of nice place to live, we need to hold these institutions accountable. So their role is that of any powerful institution, and that is to behave responsibly and to kind of make sure that the world that we live in kind of moves forward rather than brings itself to self-destruct.
Okay, and in the previous segment, I was just joking. I know I'm not evil. At least I don't think I'm evil, just because I've worked in those companies. And one of the things that we were talking about during the break is you were making a distinction between corporate behavior and versus the people who work within those institutions. But, you know, let's say I work in those institutions, and, you know, when you're in those companies, well, I can honestly say at Microsoft, when I was there, my primary focus was making the best possible product that met the needs of the consumer. And I'm not just saying that because it's on some corporate social responsibility, you know, report. I honestly, that was what I was driven for. That's what I thought about. I was trying to make the world a better place, to have a desktop on every, you know, to add efficiency. I mean, that's really what I was thinking of. But,
this,
I mean.
Yeah, really important point, right, that all of these people, you know, are actually very nice people. I mean, for the most part, you know, at every level, there are many, you know, incredibly nice CEOs and all the people that work for the company. And, you know, everybody is just kind of getting by like everyone else and trying to kind of do things right. And yet the corporations, all of these kind of good intentions can end up with some very problematic results. And so what we want to do is kind of hold the corporation accountable, because there are forces kind of pushing it in the other direction. Like, we have in some ways unintentionally set up a market system which rewards kind of profit at any cost, and thus drives companies, for example, to move all of our jobs abroad, and then to move them abroad from one place to a place that is less expensive and has less environmental regulation, and then to another place that has lower labor standards and is even cheaper and has no environmental regulation, and from there to somewhere else. Now, we've created this system not intentionally, not thinking about it, and yet between us, and particularly with publicly held corporations, stockholders and investors who are just interested in those numbers ticking up in the right direction, you know, we produce some kind of economic world which is generating results that are really troubling. And there's no kind of individual to kind of point the finger at. And there's no, you know, we can't just get the bad people out, because there aren't bad people really running the system. It's the system itself that needs to be changed.
I know, but how do we change it? I mean, it's called capitalism, right? This is how market economies work. I mean, it's called capitalism. It's, you know, it's why we're here.
You know, capitalism itself exists today in many forms. You know, what they have in Zimbabwe is capitalism, and yet they have like a, you know, $9 trillion inflation rate. And technically what they have in China is capitalism, but, you know, working conditions in the U.S. look very different than working conditions in China. So technically capitalism is actually a whole spectrum of capitalisms. And the question is, do we want to set up a system for ourselves which results in what I would call brutal capitalism? Raw capitalism, in which you basically eliminate ultimately all working and environmental standards at the kind of bottom line of profit? Or do we want to create a kind of long-term sustainable capitalism which benefits the bottom line and workers and the environment and other things? Because we have models for that. We have, you know, there are models in Europe. There are models in even Canada has a, you know, a slightly better model for this than we do. And so that capitalism on this spectrum is really about choice. Do we want to end up, you know, 50 years down the road in the kind of most brutal forms of capitalism that we can imagine? Or do we want to end up in a system of capitalism that somehow, you know, people and the environment all win at the same time that capitalism moves forward?
But here's the problem. We're in a global economy. So I can say, yes, absolutely, I don't want to devolve into brutal capitalism. But the bottom line is, someone from China is going to produce a solar panel cheaper than someone in the U.S. because they've made investments. And maybe that's part of what you're saying. I mean, those are the kind of things that the government should be doing to actually support us to do the right things. But I mean, ultimately, because it's capitalism and we live in a – maybe it's a cop-out for me. But, I mean, because it's capitalism and you live in a global marketplace, what to do? I mean, we're driven by trying to get our prices down. And consumers will not buy stuff that's expensive, right? So what do we do?
Well, in some ways we're already doing it. So, for example, you know, most of Europe and much of Australia and Canada, there are many other economies that are very powerful in the world that are already moving further in the right direction than we have moved. And we can go and say, like, okay, we don't want to move in the direction, say, that China is going, which there is, you know, almost no minimum wage and there's terrible environmental standards and things are much more brutal and so forth. And that is kind of another thing that's pulling global capitalism in a different direction. And yet, out of all of this, with all of this talk, you know, it's estimated now that, I don't know if listeners know of the term LOHAS, the lifestyles of health and sustainability marketplace. Like this year, in 2012, it was estimated $290 billion were spent in that LOHAS market. This is $290 billion really sent out by consumers to say, hey, you know what? I am thinking long term. I want to see kind of products and companies and people and the environment all benefit, and this part of the marketplace is growing at an enormous rate where that kind of general kind of competitive lowest price marketplace is just not growing at the same pace.
Okay, fair enough. I get that. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that because I have another question after that. Poor Alice Jones. He caught me when I'm in an ornery mood. We have the Barrel Shopping Guide. And in the next segment, we're going to be talking about how you can actually buy products and vote in for good companies, doing good things, be a good citizen, and still not have to play outrageous prices. And the top 10 things you can do to change your world. We'll be right back.
CBS Radio's The Sky.
The Sky.
Now back to Fire It Up with CJ. Be a force for good. And fire it up with CJ. Log on, fireitupwithcj.com. And call CJ now.
248-545-7685.
On CBS Radio's The Sky. The Sky.
Today on Fire It Up with CJ, we have author of The Better World Shopping Guide, Professor Ellis Jones, here on CBS Radio. I'm Cassandra from CBS Sky Radio, and we're going to go right back to CJ and Professor Jones.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Today we just had an interesting conversation, Cassandra, Ellis and I, about how challenging it is for us to just, I said, it takes me like five times longer to go to the grocery store because, you know, one, what grocery store should I go to? And then once I go to the grocery store, which product should I buy? And you know, it's like, well, where did these blueberries get shipped from? They're shipped from Chile. And what's the environmental cost for these? And what about these organic products? And how about these pesticides used in this other thing? And how about this company that uses lobbyists? I mean, it's super, super confusing. And Ellis, you were saying that that's why data is so important. Tell us, the listeners, a little bit about that.
So, yeah, I mean, this is the average person trying to shop responsibly should, by definition, be kind of driving themselves crazy at this point because there's so much random information and labels and, you know, things to weigh environmentally and socially and locally and, you know, it's crazy making. And so part of this project was an attempt to kind of pull together all of the data that we have around all of these issues and bring it to one place so that we can just simply have a sense of if the company is good or bad, better or worse. And that's why I ended up with this A to F scale. You know, I have the Better World Shopping Guide, but I also made a little iPhone app called Better World Shopper because, you know, even the shopping guide isn't simple enough because I don't even carry this around in my pocket anymore because it's a book. You know, it's small, it's for your pocket, but, you know, I carry my phone everywhere. And so now I just check on the phone and I get access to the grade. And as long as the data is good, then the grade kind of simplifies the decision because, you know, we don't need three-hour shopping experiences. We need to get through our days. And, you know, we can't weigh absolutely every aspect of what's out there because we're not professional researchers. I have studied this for over a decade, and I still have trouble. So I can't imagine what it's like for the average consumer.
Okay, so there's an iPhone app. Does it allow me to scan a UPC code and then get like an A or B? How does it work?
It actually, you can type in the name and it'll tell you, you know, the brand name or the company name and it'll tell you the grade right off the bat. It doesn't allow you to scan. And, you know, a lot of people have asked me about the scanning things, but I don't know how many times you've actually scanned things, but it actually takes too long. You sit around, you're like, you know, it's not like scanning at the checkout counter, these iPhones and so forth. Like, you pull the product, and you find the bar, you're trying to aim it correctly, and then you get beep. And then what happens with these phone apps is, like, most of them have the scanning thing. They don't have 90% of the products in there. And so after you took the time to get all this just right, then you get, like, no grade.
Yeah.
So
okay.
I don't even bother with the scanning. It just takes too long. I just want to know the grade, and so I just, you know, give people what the company is doing or what the brand name is rated as.
Okay, so let's say I go there and either the product is not of good quality or the prices doesn't really work for me, because, I mean, there's a correlation between doing these social responsibility things. I go to Whole Foods and I know I'm paying a premium. I'm paying a premium because I know they've already done screening already for me to take away partially hydrogenated oils, and they're looking at all these different things. I mean, am I just going to have to spend more to be a good citizen and a good consumer?
Well, this is a good point. So a couple of things to note. In general, right, the kind of higher rated companies tend to cost a little more, sometimes a lot more than the lower rated companies. And that's partly because, you know, to generate enormous profits, you know, companies have been forced to, like, cut their prices down to the bare minimum. And they do that by, like, you know, exploiting labor and environmental conditions abroad typically. So often there is a correlation. So you're noticing the right thing, and that is that there are higher prices out there. But it's not always the case. So, for example, you know, Coke and Pepsi are kind of two companies that have almost exactly the same price point, create almost exactly the same product, and yet get very different grades.
Okay, what's Coke, what's Pepsi? I'm curious. So, I didn't know.
So Coca-Cola gets a B, Pepsi gets a B and Coca-Cola gets an F.
Wow.
And these are two soda companies, and now they're both competing also in the bottled water arena. So Coca-Cola owns Dasani, and Pepsi owns Aquafina. And, you know, they compete on all of these levels, and they're two kind of mega corporations, and yet one is trying to take as seriously as a corporation of that size can take without kind of losing its own competitive edge, you know, some level of corporate social responsibility, and the other is kind of, throwing out everything out the window in order to just increase the bottom line. And it's that kind of information that I think is important for consumers to understand, that even if they're in a Walmart, there are choices to be made. Sometimes it's not between an A and an F. Sometimes it's between, you know, a B and a D. And in that case, it is important to choose the B company. But I have to say, you know, with your Whole Foods comment, you know, I get this all the time too, and I don't have a Whole Foods available locally. So, you know, sometimes I'll make a drive like once a month to a Whole Foods. But I have to say my local market now, which is Shaw's I have locally, has started to create like a little organic and natural foods aisle. But to be honest, they mark their same products up further than Whole Foods. So that I'm paying like a 20 or 30% premium to shop at my local market if I'm buying some of this stuff, or I could actually get it cheaper at Whole Foods. So it's not always the case that a place like Whole Foods will have it as more expensive. Sometimes.
Okay, fair enough. So top 10 things that we should consider changing: bank, gasoline, supermarket, retail stores, car. How did you come up with this list? You have top 10 things: seafood, chocolate, coffee, tea, credit cards, cleaning products. How did you come up with this list?
So what I did is I went through each of the kind of categories that I rank in the book and each of the industries, and I began to consider, you know, where are people going to get kind of the most, quote, bang for their buck from a social responsibility standpoint. And, you know, I generated the list based on, you know, how practical the options were, how many A's versus F's were available to people, how expensive the change would be, and that's how I got this top 10 list. So a bank is, you know, a real pain to change, right? Because, you know, you have to go through the process of getting your money out of one bank and putting it into another. But the nice thing is you only do it once. If you do it once, you make that change, you know, every time you go to bed at night, every time you wake up in the morning, even if you don't go to an ATM that day, that bank money is either working to make the world better, or your savings account or checking or what have you is making the world worse. So it's a wonderful one-time change you never have to think about again.
Okay, but like the bank you recommend, New Resource Bank, where the heck is that? That's for a business bank. Where do I go? What bank should I go to? What's your top
bank? So a lot of these banks, right, are kind of scattered around the country. Some have online banking available, but the best bet, the most practical option for most people is going to be a local credit union. So, for example, here I'm in Worcester, Massachusetts. As soon as I moved here, I looked up what are the local credit unions, and then I went online, and I do a lot of my stuff online, so I looked to see who has the best online interface, and I chose this local credit union, and it's not the perfect option. It's not an A+, but it is a B, and it's much better than, you know, say, a Bank of America at an F or a Citibank. Mm-hmm. And so I now do, you know, the vast majority of my banking through this local credit union, and every day, like, that credit union is investing in primarily local kind of community mm-hmm. projects, so housing and local businesses and so forth, rather than, you know, Bank of America and Citibank investing in all kinds of, as we learned with the economic crisis, problematic investments abroad that are then going to kind of build us up to the next economic collapse, et cetera.
Okay, gasoline, where should I go?
So gasoline, if you're on the East Coast like I am, then the choice is easy because we have something called Sunoco out here. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's like Hess and Citgo, and even a Shell at this point is probably the best of the big guys. You know, and that's an easy option because there is no price difference. There's almost no price difference in gasoline, and there's no product quality difference. So you go from one corner of the street to the other corner of the street, and you just make sure and you avoid Exxon and Chevron and some of those guys, and you've already started to make a difference.
Interesting. Okay. Supermarket. Any thoughts on that one as a close? Because those are the big three. Where should I go?
Supermarkets are, if you have something like a Trader Joe's available, or a Whole Foods, if you're really lucky and you have a kind of farmer's market that you can go to or a local cooperative, those are even better. And if you don't, then, you know, you find good brands in your local supermarket. Again, I have a local supermarket that is not particularly responsible, and I make sure and I buy from good companies and good brands even when I'm in that market.
Right. So it's and then it's Trader Joe's. Cassandra said she just got the app. Trader Joe's is B+, and Whole Foods is A-.
Yeah.
So those are the grades, and Coast folks are curious. So this has been fabulous. Thank you so much for being patient with all my irascibility with all this stuff.
That's a real pleasure, CJ. I really enjoyed it.
It's been great. I really enjoyed it, too. So, folks, make sure to join us next week when we talk to Britta Doubles about how women can overcome their fears. Next month, it's all about women. Woo, women power! And then we're going to talk with Linda Greenlaw, who's a famed sword fisherman boat captain. And she's going to be talking about her greatest battle, an adopted teenage daughter. I love that. Okay, folks, have a great weekend. And thank you so much. This was fascinating. And thank you for putting this together.
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks so much. Have a great weekend, everyone.